It's Wednesday, July 22nd, 2009, and you're listening to episode 157 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 4 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's John.
And my name is Chris.
You'll notice Pat's not here. And since we're not sure exactly where he's at, we did a little Mad Libs to determine where Pat is at. So I got all of my words from John, Chad, and Chris. So just in case you're curious, Pat is at a squishy cup, casually pumping Cybertron. He is dressed as a purple scrotum.
Nice. I was hoping purple and scrotum would line up.
So nice. That's where Pat's at. Getting to more important things. Power 16-2, we enter the final battle. Whoa. This one, I'm going to watch and see how it goes. If there's a clear winner after a week.
That's the final countdown.
Well, this is kind of a final countdown of sorts.
I guess so.
Chris, if you get Europe to do a guest appearance on this show, then we will allow you to play Final Countdown.
I think it would have been great if Europe and Asia would have gone on tour at the same time.
That would have been awesome.
Wouldn't that not have been good? And then they could have had America opening for them.
Who totally... I mean, what band promoter didn't try and make that happen?
Really?
I mean,
no, they could have called it the Hemisphere Tour.
I know. Who fell asleep at the wheel?
It was the Iron Curtain,
one.
Man. We could not unite them until, like, 89.
Damn it.
So if there is
stupid
a...
Stupid communism.
If there's a...
I hate communists.
If there's a...
Dan, you're a communist.
I know. I want all the airtime for myself. I'm just like Stalin. I'm just like
it's
Napoleon.
You're
the
Stalin,
pig.
All right.
Dan Repperger, tear down this podcast.
It's the people's airtime.
So, if there's a clear winner after 1 week, we'll announce it and close down the Power 16-2 and assume it has been decided.
The fate of the universe.
Which is why, if it's close, we'll let it go until it's a little more clear.
Whoa.
So here's what it comes down to. The final battle in the Power 16-2 is Julie versus Baron von Badass.
Wow.
This is truly
Julia
epic.
Julia Hussey defeated an entire armada of capital ships.
That is,
you know,
amazing.
Why? Because they're boring!
Which is
they
why
fell
they
fell asleep
it...
at the wheel.
You know,
she just
it's
declared
not that
victory.
They're boring or they're exciting. They're just there. It's like the yeah. color blue.
They had a problem similar to the Death Star. They weren't designed to repel small single ships like
that's
that.
Right.
She was able to go through the capital ship trench, drop her bars down the tube, and blew the whole damn thing up.
It's like a...
So that's how it is in your family, eh?
That's exactly how it's like here.
Do we need to do a Mad Lib to
no
find out what Chris
No wonder your marriage
does?
Has been holding up so well. You know, I think Timothy Zahn took the Death Star at a smart new angle. It wasn't about the firepower. It was about direct control by the Emperor. He didn't have to delegate to his fleet, his moffs who could turn against him, his governors, whatever. As long as it was one big, giant, frickin' death egg, he had the daddy pants and no one could take them away. I just started reading Heir to the Empire, like, years too late.
What if the Emperor said, okay, we need to blow up Planet X, but we'll say 60% of the population of the people who man and crew the Death Star are from Planet X or from System X, and or they get the idea of, if they can do it to X, they can do it to my planet yeah. Y. And there's a rebellion.
I don't think Lucas thought that deep.
If you play Star Wars Rebellion, you'll get that. Because if you fire the super laser, public opinion jumps in the rebel direction instantly.
Yeah.
And it's a game balance mechanic, but it makes sense. Because holy crap, you just blew up a planet.
Yeah. Yeah.
The exact same thing happens in Masters of Orion 2. When you do that, basically, if there's anybody who hasn't declared war against you, they declare war against you.
I love those moves. The atrocities in Alpha Centauri. Once it gets down to just you and the other last guy, mm-hmm. there's nothing to worry about. Nerve staplings are plenty. Social spending, zero. All construct planet busters. Turn the governors off. Who gives a damn? Yeah, so I'm Brother Lal, and I'm supposed to be Kofi Annan of the future. Dissent is no longer necessary for unity.
You know, I do have to say, wow. as obviously I have a certain bias in this battle, but I'm not going to say who I'm really voting for. But I think it'll be close. I think it'll be a close final.
I don't think it's
going to
be close. I think Julie's
no,
blow
we're
away.
Not influencing the vote.
I'm not influencing crap. I'm making a prediction.
Yeah, but all the John fans will be like, who's John voting for?
Oh, John fans, as numerous as you are, vote on whoever you are going to vote for. It is my divine will. By the 22 of you who have made me the winner of the host poll, I use my newfound political capital. I'm going to be voting for Julie, but you can vote for whoever you want to.
You are a benevolent ruler.
I know.
You choose to give your subjects free will.
That's right.
Pope John the last.
That's right.
Dude, we're never going to run out of Pope Johns. We'll be Pope Johning until the Death Star blows up the earth.
I've always said if I'm going to open like a church or a bank or something, I want to be the last bank of whatever, the last. Because you know, it's always like the first Baptist church of such and such a street. Well, I want to be like the last Baptist church of such and such a street.
Or the median Baptist church.
Yeah. You never see the 42nd Baptist Church of such and such.
I've seen a crazy one. I saw the one that was like the 36th or something.
No way.
What the hell?
Was this a franchise?
Is this some sort of, yeah.
There was
some, or it could be a McDonald's, or it could be like a humility
thing. There was something
thing,
like that in the ending credits of Contra.
Really?
Yeah, there's a guy in the ending credits of Contra, and of course it's some
Contra
Japanese name, but it's like something something, the 282nd.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the way it's written in the credits. I have no idea if I just misinterpret what the numbers mean where they're placed.
Yeah. Maybe a typo. Maybe some long
lineage.
Maybe
he comes from the 282nd Infantry or something like that.
There is a thing in Japan of tracing your lineage, and there's whole government organizations devoted. It's called like the Family Register or something like that, where it allows you to trace your lineage back like a really long time.
You know, I don't know if I'm more amazed by that, Dan, or more amazed the fact that you read all the credits to Contra.
Yeah. Hey, I'm amazed you beat Contra.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you beat that game, then you're going to read every single last
video
credit.
Game credits all used to confuse the hell out of me because I didn't know what Japanese names were or what foreign languages are. So I'd be there beating Mega Man 2 when I'm, you know, 4 years old. I'm like, who the hell is Tetsuo Nakashima?
Were you shocked that a Legend of Zelda level was a swastika?
I don't think I knew enough to know, but yeah, once I did find out, I was like, whoa. I mean, I know
swastika
is not a Nazi symbol. It comes from
Sanskrit,
Asia. Yeah. Hindus use it. Buddhists use it. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I read a manga, actually, called Blade of the Immortal. Absolutely fantastic manga. Not for kids. Probably one of the bloodiest, most violent mangas I've ever read. Has a great story in it and such, but the main character has a swastika on his kimono, on his back. That's how he kind of like identifies himself.
All right.
They actually have to put a disclaimer in the front of every single American copy. Like, it's not in the Japanese copy because everybody understands.
Not a neo-Nazi.
Well, they were Nazis.
Yeah. Well,
what the hell do they care?
Yeah, but they explained. I mean, it's a whole page, and it gives the history, as much history as you can give on a one single page. But talks about how it's a swastika, it's Sanskrit. The Nazis took it, and used it for their own, and so all these other groups use it. The Buddhist thing and all that sort of stuff.
It'd be like making the letter K off limits because the Ku Klux Klan uses it or something like that. Yeah, it's so.
Do you ever see the urban myth where there are 3 Ks on a pack of Marlboro Reds?
No.
Oh, my God.
And I've actually...
Marlboro is made by the Klan.
Yeah. I actually seen it. I mean, I've seen a pack of Marlboros, but I heard that and I looked, and sure enough, if you keep a really, really, really open mind to the point where your brain falls out, you can see how integrated into the graphics of the pack there are actually 3 Ks, and there's one on each side except for, 3 of the sides, I guess. But
I've always been a big fan of urban legends just because, of course, they have the modern twist to them, but then at the same time, they still kind of possess that edge of creepiness, which, of course, I suppose is, what they're designed to do, but there's always just that nugget of possibility, I mean,
once in a while, one of them is true, and that just sort of keeps it going.
I absolutely despise urban legends.
I despise the fact of how quickly people fall for them. That's the thing I despise the most.
I think what pisses me off is that people do not apply critical thinking to them. They don't say, this kind of raises a red flag for me. I'm going to question it. It's more like, oh, well, somebody says it's true, so it's got to be true.
Well, yeah, but it's in print. It's must
wild.
Be right.
Yeah. But it's this wild, outrageous legend. It's like, I've got an open mind. I'll believe it. But if it's something outrageous, it's throwing up red flags in my mind. You know, it's like, I got to check it out. But yeah, I think it's not so much urban legends that make me mad. But yeah, people's quickness and willingness to believe something that is so blatantly stupid. Or that is very likely untrue.
I'm kind of on Chris's side on this. I see them for what they are, and I approach them with skepticality, but I find that type of stuff fascinating because, like he said, once in a while, you'll find something where truth really is stranger than fiction. Like, I get that a lot watching stuff like Monster Quest on History Channel,
yeah.
Where typically they come up with nothing. But then there's ones where, like, I just saw one on a super crocodile or something, and all these biologists, like, it doesn't happen, they don't get that big, blah, blah, blah. And then they went out and filmed it, and they actually found the super croc that everyone was looking for.
But the example of, like, what I hate is my mom told me this urban legend that when she was, and of course she didn't believe it now that she's an adult, but she's like, when she was a kid, all bubble gum was hard. And it was like those sticks, like you'd get in
right,
a
bag,
and it was hard. You had to kind of chew it. Well, then they came out with soft bubble gum, and it was like this new thing. Well, an urban myth got started that all the soft bubble gum was made out of spider eggs. And she said that she and all of her friends and everybody she knew who were kids believed it. Now, of course, this is a little kid thing, but to think that that actually got spread and that there were people who believed it. I mean, spider eggs? How is that even possible? How is that cost effective to harvest
that?
Pretty
tasty. One spider will lay like a billion eggs. I saw Charlotte's Web. I know how this works.
I love Charlotte's Web when
Me
I was
too.
A kid.
It was heartbreaking.
I like the Family Guy version where she had Tourette's.
I didn't see that.
I never saw
that. She goes, the girl goes over to the web and it's just like bitch on it.
I want to see that. We're YouTubing that once we're done here.
I'll see if I can look it up.
I love Charlotte's Web. Charlotte's Web is a cherished childhood book to me.
All right. I don't want to get caught. Man, we could do probably a whole bonus episode.
We've been talking about urban legends for 12 and a half minutes.
So let's dig into this. We got some meaty stuff here to cover. One
is meat.
Sweet and meaty.
One other quick aside, I'm just real quick, is this is kind of something that's sort of taken off on its own. Yeah. Chad and I game with a guy who we've mentioned on the show by the name of Wayne, who has been playing City of Heroes and City of Villains since the release of, City of Heroes.
Like 4 years ago.
Years and years ago.
I think it was more than that.
Yeah, I think it was more than 4 years.
Might be.
But it was a long time ago, and has been playing it consistently, unbrokenly, ever since. And he's part of this ancient guild where basically everybody left but him, and so him and his wife.
Yeah.
And so I had an old copy of the game. Chad downloads it. I dust off my copy, start playing
it. What it is that I stopped playing Warhammer Online. I stopped playing all these other MMOs. I had no MMOs. And of course, Wayne, being a really huge fanboy of this game, I work with the guy. He starts talking about it. And he starts like wearing me down.
Yeah.
Because I was dead set against playing this game. I played it when it first came out, and I did not like it in any way. But he wore me down. And the fact that there's
Didn't you buy Tabula Rasa?
I did buy
Tabula
Rasa.
Man, you have got MMO buy-in diarrhea. You got to use some discretion.
You know what got me? When I think that every single MMO should do this. City of Heroes, City of Villains has a 15-day free trial, no credit card required, and you don't even have to give them an email address.
Really?
You download the client.
All right, I'll download that.
I mean, it was like, he kept hitting me. It's like, this and this and this and this and this, and I'm like, well, I didn't like this and this, and he's like, but that's changed, that was 6 years ago, that doesn't apply anymore, and this and this and this and this, and you say you like this, you say, I'm like I just don't want to download the client. It's like, it's a no-brainer, dude. No credit card, no email, you just download and play. What do you have to lose?
Well, here's the punchline.
First one's free.
So here's the punchline of the whole thing. So Chad and I start playing it with Wayne and his wife Sarah, and all of a sudden Dawn comes in, and then a guy from the forum joins us, and then another guy from the forums, and a third guy from the forums.
And then there's
George comes over. Now Pat's coming over.
Well, and then we start posting pictures and talking about it on the forum. Yeah, it's like, hey, we did this thing last night. Here's some pictures, and some other people post pictures. And then we start getting a couple of people going, you know, I just might reactivate my account. I just might reactivate my account. This sounds interesting.
This is not a Fear the Boot official guild.
No, it's not even our guild. We don't run it.
We don't run it. It's actually run by a guy we're friends with, but he is not affiliated with Fear the Boot. I don't know that I ever intend to do a Fear the Boot affiliated guild again, which is a rant I'll go on to on another time. But I just want to let you guys know, if you're interested in hanging with us and you happen to play the game or have the game, we are in a guild over on the Pinnacle server, Villain Side. It's called Sin, Strength, and Numbers. It's one name. And I will link in the show notes our global IDs you can use to contact us and how you can track us down. But that's Pinnacle server, Villains. Mm-hmm. Once again, it's not our guild. It's just where we're hanging out if you want to come hang out with us.
I do have to mention one of the coolest things about the guild is that they have this base building thing, and unlike in Age of Conan, the base you build actually does something, does a lot of things actually, and it's really cool. And the idea is that you make this super group, and the people earn quote unquote money. It's called prestige for this. It's not actual money, but they earn points that the people who run the guild can spin. Well, what's really cool about it is that this is a guild that has, as of now, like 5 people in it. But we have over 2 million prestige points because it's a really big, super active guild 4 years ago.
And then they all quit.
And then they all got to max level, and then everybody quit except Wayne and his wife. And so they have this gigantic base and this huge pool of resources.
So we basically inherited the Wayne family fortune.
We did.
For doing nothing.
Yeah.
And now we're having a great time. Like I said, it's really not a Fear the Boot official thing, but if you want to join us, that's where we're hanging out. All right, let's get down to some brass tacks or role-playing games here.
Oh, boy.
All righty, Chris.
Is the rubber about to hit the road?
It damn well is. Chris, you're having a problem right now.
I am having a slight problem.
And I'm not talking about the one Cialis fixes. I'm talking about players that don't want to learn the rules.
Cialis can fix that.
I'm having problems with the Cialis right now, and it's making it very difficult to record. I'm not sure which cylindrical object to talk into, if you know what I'm saying.
One is long, knobby, and has an ugly off-colored tip, and the other needs to go back in your pants.
That's right. The microphone is so much more comfortable in my pocket. here's a dilemma which actually is new to me, and I have my suspicions on what to blame it on, but we'll get to that in a minute. But the problem I'm having is players who, not through adamant refusal, but more through the just general inaction or kind of unwillingness to do so, they don't really have much of a desire to read the rules. And the example of what's happening to me is I'm currently running a 3-5 game with my oldest son, who's 17, and his 3 other friends, who are also 16 or 17 years old. Being as young as they are, they have a lot of other distractions going on in their life, primarily video games, you know, and amongst other things, but they just don't really, they haven't shown any interest to read the rule book. We've gone through several sessions. I've explained many things about their characters, many things about their feats that they can do and skills and whatnot, but none of them have ever asked, can I see the book? Can I read this in the rule book? Can I see this in the book? And so now it's getting to the point where level-wise, they're getting up there and they're getting some bonus powers and all these things that they can do, but they're not making real good mental notations of what they can do. And so they're kind of been relying on me to fill in those holes. And now it's the point too, as a DM, I can't do that. I can't divide up my time that much. So my course of action, what I have decided to do, and we can talk about what options you are available. I've decided to essentially convert them over to a simpler system, which is Savage Worlds.
Well, hold on. Fixing problems is no fun. The blame game's a blast. What do you blame for this?
I blame it specifically on their age. They enjoy playing, but I think that a 300-plus page rule book, I think, intimidates them. Dude, in a certain respect. They don't want to make that commitment.
How giddy were we when we were 17 to bury ourselves in 300-page rule books? I know the two dudes here were. Chris, when did you start?
Let me put to you this way. I've played through 3 versions of Dungeons & Dragons. Huge, long campaigns, several characters each, 3 versions of Dungeons & Dragons. I didn't read any of those rules. I hate rules. You know why? It's not because I'm young or I have ADD or I play video games or MTV, you know, stole my attention span. It's because it's boring. Rules are boring. All role-playing game rules are is a different versions of the same algebra equation. And that is dull. There are math people out there who are
But that's not... The problem is, though, is they've been shown how to play. I've illustrated to them how to play. Here's the mechanics. Here's how it works. Here's where you reference on your character sheet when you do thing X.
I think you basically got three choices. The one you've said is move to Savage World so they don't have to learn anything. The other, which stinks, is do it all for them. And it sounds to me like you've kind of been okay doing this through the first couple levels, but now it's getting silly. And the third is just... increase the challenges accordingly and say, hey, if you want to keep getting powers like you're supposed to, you got to look them up and pick them. I mean, it's not that much. You know?
Third option, I debated about doing that. I thought about doing that, just throwing some heavy shit at them and then having them just barely make it out alive and say, look, if you'd have done this, if you'd have done this, yeah. if you'd have done this, you would have made
it
through.
To be a big
but
creature.
Because you're not looking at the book, this is not happening. But then I thought at the same time, well, wait a second. That isn't necessarily fair to them, considering their economic status as being 17-year-olds, half of which are not working. And this is not an endorsement of Savage Worlds, but the Savage Worlds rulebook for the Explorer's Edition, that's $10.
Okay, you're adding in a new dimension I had not considered, which is...
it's an economic
factor. These guys
factor.
Have no three e-books, and they have limited access to yours, and so...
and they're much willing to spend the $40 or $50 or $30 even on a video game for the 360 that they can use their Xbox Live accounts with than they would be to spend it on a main rulebook.
Yeah. Well, rulebooks these days are oppressively costly, and I don't blame them much. Like we all say here, when was the last time that Chad or Dan, when was the last time you bought an RPG rulebook?
I make my own games.
Yeah, actually, I bought the 4th edition starter box, and that was the last time in memory.
I picked up New World of Darkness.
Oh, and Star Wars Saga.
And Hunter the Vigil maybe 6 months ago, okay. a year ago,
but,
I don't know.
But you would say that your consumption in the last 10 years of buying books has cliff-dived from the 10 years before that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
There's two big problems that I have as a GM in regard to people that don't want to learn the rules. And I accept coming into the gaming table that everyone there gets something a little bit different out of gaming. For some people, it's the story. For some people, it's the tactics, whatever. And in the same way, there are some people there that really get a kick out of the rules. Let's say the far extreme of this is Tex. He's someone who loved Task Force Starfleet battles. On the far opposite extreme, I've got somebody like Chad where I could say we're just going to decide everything by flipping a coin and he'd be okay with that.
You and your mechanics
and then,
crutch.
You know, and then there's people sprinkled all across the
Chad,
middle.
Chad, you just want to play pretend, and that's fine.
Right, and that's
not
fine.
Really a role-playing game.
Well, and you know, when I run a game and I play a game, I don't strip away the rules. I try to make the rules as rule-light as I possibly can for my own sanity, but I understand that other people want that simulation.
Right.
They want that. They don't want to role play out diplomacy.
And I think this is kind of where my group is at. That's the suspicion I'm getting, and I think it's because they kind of grew up more with a console in their hands or a controller in their hands with the, you know, the 4 or 5 button option, as opposed to like you guys who grew up with a keyboard sitting in front of you and had this keyboard of options where when you play your PC games, you can. And so they like it. I think their desire is to have it be simpler.
Well, getting back to what I was saying, when I sit down at the table, I understand that everyone's going to have a different level of interest. And so I will try to accommodate that. I'm not going to expect Chad to memorize and understand all the depth of the rules mechanics the way that I would someone like our friend Dave,
right,
who's also really into that kind of stuff. But there are two issues that I have with this, with someone who refuses to learn the rules at all. The first one is I, as a game master, just can't be aware of everything. This isn't even a role-playing game, but we were playing the game Descent. I was just playing it with my brother, his fiance, and my little sister. And when we drew all their skill cards and stuff, I said, look, you guys have got to keep track of this and tell me when something relevant comes up, because I just can't memorize it all. The same thing is going to be true in a role-playing game. I don't know every feat you have. I don't know every spell you have. I don't know every piece of armor you have. You've got to tell me these things. And if you are so rules ignorant, you don't realize what you're capable of. In the end, you're just going to screw yourself, and the game's going to get imbalanced and messed up and blah, blah, blah. But the other complaint I would have, and this, Chris, may be where I will agree with you that consoles have kind of spoiled things, is if you think about it, you could not get away with this in any other form of gaming. You cannot sit down to play progressive rummy and say, I'm not going to learn the rules, just tell me which cards to play. You could not go out onto a tennis court and say, I refuse to learn the rules, or I'm not going to abide by the rules. We're just going to whatever. I mean, everything becomes a game of Calvin ball at best. And obviously the joke of Calvin ball is that ultimately there is no game. Mm-hmm. And
no, there is a game.
Well, there is a game. Our point, it's
the game is that there is no rules.
Right. Yeah. And
there is one rule, and that is you cannot use the same rules twice.
Whereas with a console, you can hand me the controller, and probably within a matter of seconds, I can figure out what the buttons allow me to do and force my way through the game with probably just two or three of them. And you don't have to learn rules. I mean, even going back to the older games, like on the Apple IIc, you had to learn the game. Mm-hmm. You know, it what was available wasn't always right there in your face, the nice menus.
I've got to say it. You two sound like old men. Seriously. Because the reason why you sound like old men is because every generation of old men bitches that the younger generation...
I'm not bitching about younger people.
Chris is.
I'm not bitching about younger people. I'm just saying that the circumstances...
Listen to what you guys are saying. You're saying that video games are the reason why these kids don't have the attention span to learn the rules.
Hold on, Chris,
you're going to have a longer defense. Let me get my defense first.
All right.
I'm going to say no, and here's why. First off, I never named an age group, okay? Mm-hmm. All I said...
But we're talking about young kids.
Well, okay, fair enough. Maybe by context,
Chris's
I implied
group
something.
With his kid in it started this, but that's not at all right. What we're solely talking about.
And we'll
about.
Let Chris defend himself here in a second. But the point that I was making was that console games are the only kind of game I can come up with where I'm not going to learn the rules will allow you to still play the game. You could not sit down at a poker table, say, I'm not going to learn how to play poker, and expect to play poker.
Even some PC games. Try playing TIE Fighter right off the cuff without knowing what F9 through F12 do.
Precisely. But you could hand me a controller and say, go play...
It's a bad thing that I start go play Mech Assault. In my mind with F9 through F12.
You could hand me a controller and say, go play Mech Assault, and I'm not going to need to read the rule book. I don't need to learn the rules. Now, I'm not blaming a generational thing. I was just giving the aside that console games seem to be unique in entertainment in that they don't require you to learn much of anything.
Okay, well then going on Chris's thing, where you're saying that these kids aren't into the rules, into reading, into the figuring it out, because they grew up on video games, they grew up on a certain kind of video games or certain way of video games. I mean, that sounds like so old manish to me, because every generation blames the generation that the
every generation.
Yeah, here comes Richard Marx.
they blame the younger generation because they say, oh well, you know, they are into this, and therefore this. You know, they're into that crazy rock and roll music. Therefore, they're going to be into all this drugs. They're into that crazy jazz and swing music, and so they're into this. And no, teenagers. By their nature, whether it was in the 80s, the 90s, the 1890s, the 1390s, doesn't matter. Teenagers are teenagers.
And I'm not saying that it's strictly just their 360 plan that's causing them to not want to pick up the 3.5 core rulebook, okay? I'm saying that might be a contributing factor, but I think that there's a lot of other factors. I think that they enjoy the activity. But because they enjoy the activity at its base level, that's good enough for them. They're not willing to explore deeper. Whereas we, when we were younger, we did do that. We did want to explore deeper. And yeah, granted, I never read any rule book that I ever had cover to cover. No way. Never. It always got read in chunks because there was always just way too much to digest in one sitting because I had a short attention span. But this is what I really liked doing. And so I paid that attention to it. And I think they're similar, but they're at a level where they're fine with it.
I didn't get deeper or want to explore getting deeper into role-playing games until I was 18, 19, 20. I mean, Dan, is that the case or not? I mean, I don't
remember your progression. Yeah. I can say as for me personally, I was pretty consumptive from the start, but that's just one of my quirks. I'm a completionist.
You had the bedroll full of guns. I remember that character.
Oh, yeah. But the point is, I'm a completionist. What does that have to do with learning the rules?
No, I'm
making
just
fun of my dumb characters.
No, I'm just we're talking about the deepness.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
right. All right.
You knew that an assault rifle does 2d8 damage to an adult human,
but he knew
50
that
hit point.
The character is that you couldn't have every single gun in the rule book,
so
but you could have the pieces to every single gun in the rule book.
The point was, I've always been a completionist. If
it's a fantastic character.
Good idea.
If I sit down to play a JRPG, I'm one of those guys that has to get every achievement and finish every race and whatever.
That's so dumb.
It is. Honestly, it is. And I'm being broken of that. Star Ocean is punishing me for this. It's punishing me horribly.
You know what I think?
The wrath of God is packaged in that game, I tell you. But
you know what I think punishes that the most is these achievements that you get where it's multiplayer achievements where you have to do crazy things with a certain kind of people who have earned certain kinds of achievements while they are doing certain things. And it's like, then they get an achievement where you have to play multiplayer with one of the developers. What?
I'm not even talking about Xbox achievements.
This game sold 3 million copies. There's 30 developers. What?
We're probably so sick of the game they don't touch it anymore.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, you know, and I'm not even talking about Xbox achievements. I'm talking, let's go back to the PlayStation 2. Let's go back to Star Ocean Till the End of Time, which was one of the most ghastly games I've ever played. You don't believe there's such a thing as an angry god. Play that game all the way through. And bunny races, okay? You had to race these stupid little rabbits, kind of like Chocobo Racing in Final Fantasy VII, except it's worse. And literally, I had to tape down the X button and leave the console sitting by itself, playing by itself, for roughly 40 hours.
Sounds like Devil May Cry 2.
To get a trophy I didn't even freaking need.
Why do you even care?
Because
how can that possibly be worth 4 minutes?
Because he's a completionist.
Because I'm a completionist.
No. That's passive language.
This was
own up to why you do this. This is not just how you are. You're making an active decision to be an idiot.
Yeah.
Because
when he was young, he got a cupcake package that was Hostess cupcakes. It was all wrapped right, and there was only one cupcake, but there were two slots, and he felt cheated his whole life.
No.
He is trying to fill that other cup to get his cupcake.
It's for one reason. It's two reasons. One of them I'm not going to give on mic, but the reason I will give on mic is because of the fact that the fear that I have is that I'm going to miss something.
I see.
And like Aerosmith, you don't want to miss a thing.
No, that is a ghastly song. But I'm afraid what
an excellent movie.
For example, I played through Final Fantasy VII the first time before game facts existed, okay? And I missed several little hidden scenes that explain quite a bit about the plot.
Never mind that it was Final Fantasy VII and they probably all contradicted each other.
Well,
because no one person was writing that game.
But my point being that I've always hated the thought that I'm missing out on something. Something cool in this I'm not seeing.
I see.
Never, ever, ever play Final Fantasy Tactics then.
Oh.
Fun, wonderful game. It is in my top five.
It's in my top three.
I would probably put
Why
it in my top
three. Why do you think I've started the game and never completed it about 18 times?
But it came out in a time when they were trying to push strategy guides.
Yep.
And all those Japanese games and even some American games had things in it. Wasn't clues. It wasn't hints.
If you go to Dorter Trade City on October 15th of the third game year, and
you have
Ramza and Delita are in your party, but Agrius isn't, and the fourth item on your list is a Phoenix Down, you'll get a 15-second cutscene with Gustav that explains nothing.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, if you have that convoluted sort of thing, and in-game there's like a clue trail, a puzzle that you can find and follow, it would still piss me off because it's so convoluted, but yeah, I understand it. There's people into that.
At least there's the
journey.
There's no
clues. There's no puzzle. It's just, if these random things fall into
gaming
place.
Same thing here. I absolutely hate it. Obscurantist
gaming. But
the other
argument to that is those are designed to just be semi-random little pepper moments, and if you look at the game saying, I must get every one, you're an idiot because you don't need everyone to play the game, and you're going to drive yourself nuts trying to find them all.
Yeah.
Right, which I'm fully admitting.
Okay.
I'm not arguing that point.
Yeah.
And like I said, I am going through a character transition. I am being sifted like wheat right now by Star Ocean 4.
It's like a Final Fantasy 3. I forget what it's called here in the States, but or in Japan.
Six.
Final Fantasy 6, it's where I got a limit break in one of my characters. And I am
the desperation attacks, whenever they had like below 5% of the hit points and they were kneeling, every once in a while, if you just did a regular melee attack, they would just go nuts.
But every once in a while, as in 2% of the time.
Oh, almost never.
Almost never. Yeah. And I am the only person I know who I've talked to who have ever actually seen
I've seen it several times, but I've also played FF6 to completion like 5 times. So.
I've played it twice, and in those 2 times, I've seen it once.
Yeah.
All right, but let's get back to the original
It was amazing.
Point.
It's pretty cool.
I about creamed.
I did not know it was coming.
I've never
first
played
time.
A single Final Fantasy game ever.
And you creamed your pants when it happened to me.
Well, let's get back to the original point. So, Chris?
Yes.
You're taking them over to Savage Worlds.
I'm going to take them over to Savage Worlds.
All right. Now, Savage Worlds is obviously a significantly more streamlined, simple rule system than D&D. What are you running them in? 3.5, you said?
They're running them in 3.5, yes.
All right. So, it's a significantly more simple system than 3.5 is. But there are still rules there. There's still traits. There's still advancement. There's still points to be spent. So ultimately, aren't you going to run into the same problem, albeit now in a lower order of magnitude?
You know, and that was kind of the debate I had. But there's a couple of reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Because I mean, it's like taking a drunk driver and moving him from an 18-wheeler down to a Volvo. I mean, you've somewhat limited the problem, but
when we sat down and we started to play, you know, after we did a couple sessions, we started talking about other games that were out there, other system, you know, other genres that you could play in. And as we got through more and more sessions, and I began to realize, wow, these guys are not, they're not showing interest in the rules that we're playing. If I go to try and port them over to say, let's go play Shadowrun, or let's go play Star Wars, something like that, they're going to have to now sit down and relearn another system. And since it's been so long since I've played that game, I'm going to have to relearn the system as well. So my motive here is kind of twofold. In one, with Savage Worlds, we can keep the same core rules and switch genres so that they aren't going to have to fret and worry so much about the rules. The second reason is, considering their economic status as teenagers, if I can get them to part with even $5, I'm willing to fork over the other half, and I'll pick them up a couple copies of the rule book and then just give it to them with the hopes that they may start to read it on their own a little bit, and then they'll have an inexpensive rule book in their hands that they can do, as opposed to me trying to go and scrounge out some 3.5 rule books or rule books for any game that we may play down the line. So it's kind of a twofold motivation as to why I'm doing this. You know, one, we'll kind of reset with rules, and then we'll keep those rules for whatever game we go play. And then two, it's fairly inexpensive, so it's not a big impact on them. And, you know, it might be a good introduction for them to go and expand on if they do actually get that interest.
That sounds like a good plan.
Our next topic comes from a discussion Chad and I were having. And this has been something that has been eating at my mind for years.
40 years.
40 years. All the 40 years, 8 of which I wasn't alive. Well, I guess 7 of which I wasn't alive, 1 of which I was in a womb. But nonetheless, this has been eating at my mind for a long time.
I don't
time.
Want to think about your mother's womb.
You brought it up. And sure. Chad and I agree on this point. We're actually not going to debate each other.
We both agree that neither of us want to think about his mother's womb.
So this is mostly going to be a rant about wombs.
Yes. There's just not enough
room I noticed
in
something
this to get her.
And I first noticed it in EverQuest, but the more I started looking around...
MMOs are bad.
Yeah, that too. But the more I started looking around, the more I started realizing this is true in a lot of MMOs. I started noticing it was true in a lot of tabletop RPGs as well. Shadowrun's a great example of this, which is magic users get screwed.
You just generated 10 pages in one thread on our forums.
I know.
Thank you.
Hey,
you know, I posted today outside of show discussion.
I saw that. I was so happy. Oh, by the way, your little cantrips thing. I was right. It generated a huge amount of discussion. Everyone
you were right.
Awesome.
Totally ignored.
I was
everything.
The one who called that.
Were you?
Yeah. As a man who edits the episode.
I thought that was Chad.
No. Go back and listen to the episode. I was the one that called that.
Well, everyone was calling you wrong in the thread anyway.
No, they weren't. Actually, a lot of people were agreeing with me.
I think two people were agreeing with you, but there's a lot of people who are like, nah, yeah, you're bending the rules. Yeah.
No, go back and look at the thread. There's a lot of people who, especially early on, said this is exactly how I would run the game.
Oh, God.
Or said I would.
Run it incorrectly.
Okay, fine. Yeah, get in your shots now.
Mm-hmm.
Too late.
Hey, I get them when I can.
Anyway, magic users get screwed, and here's what I mean by that. If you look at a game like EverQuest,
not if they get cantrips. Apparently,
if you look at a game like EverQuest, if you want to play a magic user, you come in with less hit points, less armor, less weapons, and yet a lot of times your capabilities are balanced to those of everybody else. So you pay penalties without getting sufficient...
This is a modern thing. In second edition, wizard spells hit harder than fighter swords, and they had utility. In Ultima Online, the early Ultima Online anyway, Explosion E-Bolt Halberd Wizards killed dudes with swords and shields and bandages.
What?
Energy Bolt.
Oh.
It's an old combination that always
said,
killed you.
The way you said it's like Explosion Halberd Wizards. I'm like... That's actually kind of cool.
No, it was. These guys would cast a combo spell. The first was a delayed damage
with their
explosion.
Halberd.
Yeah, and then a regular old energy bolt, standard direct damage spell, and then one whack with this giant super slow pole arm, and they've done more damage than the maximum hit point of a maxed out character.
But if a
good night.
But if a kobold looked at him funny, they died on the spot.
Not really.
Really?
They couldn't heal themselves very well, and there was balance to be had there. You know, if you wore a lot of armor, then you couldn't get your mana back very fast at all. But if you kept the armor off and a dex or melee guy actually got to you, he could cause you problems. So, you know, it was give and take.
It was EverQuest.
My point is, there was a time when people knew about this,
yes,
and therefore wizards hit harder than fighters.
Right. And that was always, I believe, supposed to be the point.
So
you give up weapons, armor, hit points, all this other stuff, but in return, the powers you have are just supposed to be obscene. Well, then along comes, EverQuest is where I first started thinking about it. WoW really cemented this in my mind. Was I walk out and I was playing a warlock, you know, or whatever, playing a wizard, it doesn't matter, playing some kind of a spellcaster, would go out, and my burst DPS was really about the same. And I know some people may debate because I know this changes from patch to patch because Blizzard still can't figure out balance. But over the long term of the game,
still say it's conspiracy.
I know. But my DPS was about the same as that of a rogue or a damage warrior. And
I hate DPS warriors.
Yeah, a DPS warrior.
Did you know I played a DPS warrior?
I believe you would, Chad.
And yet...
You would take the archetype that is uniquely useful as a tank and make him a DPS.
I played a two-handed Fury Warrior.
And yet...
I had rogue daggers on my warrior.
Play a rogue, man.
And yet, I have...
But rogues can't wear plate.
No armor, no hit points, and when the battle's over, you can go on to the next one still hacking and slashing away while I have to stop and wait for my mana to come back. So we're balanced in the burst, but somehow because I use magic, they just feel compelled to make me wear crappy armor, wait between fights with my thumb up my butt.
In a role-playing game.
And role-playing games, they do the same thing. Shadowrun's a great example. You have to do a lot to really mess your character up to get spells that can, in many cases, be simulated by technology anyway.
Well, look at it this way, like in a fantasy game. And I'm not going to use D&D because I'll give this broad example to illustrate my point. And somebody will say, well, in D&D, the rules say that that's totally not how it happens. And it's fair and balanced because D&D is wonderful. But 4.0 is wonderful. 4.0 sucks. And it's going to go on for 16 pages like it usually does. So in a fantasy game, generally speaking, I'm painting with a broad brush here. To play a spellcaster, you have to take some sort of advantage or whatever. Basically, you have an ability that causes damage.
Right.
And a melee class or a non-magical class has an ability that causes damage. To get your ability, you have to spend more in character creation than the other guy does. Or it costs you to cast it. Mana pool, hit points,
stun points, right, yeah.
You know, whatever the flavor of the game is. Or... And then the other guy, he just spins it. There's nothing to spend. He just activates the power over again.
Yeah, I swing the sword.
Or you can only do it so many times, like the Vancian system. You only have three magic missiles or whatever. Well, the other guy, the non-magic guy, it's just an ability. He just does it.
Or it's his armor class.
Or it's his armor class, or something like that. But in the end, you do roughly the same thing. Or my favorite one is the melee class. Does it. They hit this ability button over and over and over again. Whereas you have like a casting time with a wizard or something where you have to do the hum and a 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 same points as a sword. Well,
and that was one of the things I forgot about EverQuest that really bugged me was the interruptible casting, mm-hmm. like you said, to blast off damage that wasn't all that different than this amount of
damage. Well, an EQ1, pure wizard, the wizard class, not the magician, not the enchanter, the wizard class. Could out DPS the melees. Yeah. He was just
when you start looking at the different flavors of games, then you can start getting this granularity of, your point is invalid because in game X, video game, role playing game, it's not like
that. And we're talking about a broad trend. Yeah. We are not nitpicking a single system or a single MMO.
A trend that is admittedly changing. I mean, in 4th edition, wizards don't have mana. They just have daily powers and encounter powers that are magic. And, you know, it's evolving, but for most of the last 10 years, it's been this way.
Yeah.
Certainly all through 3rd edition, all through World of Warcraft.
I've got to tell you guys, I'm really torn on this whole concept. Because on one hand, it bugs me. And it doesn't matter that it's magic or non-magic or anything like this. We could be talking about super science, or we could be talking about melee. Maybe melee, you know, the guy can only swing his sword 3 times. And then he can't use that ability.
That's how they're in 4th edition. You have one super swing a day, and that's your fighter. And
what bugs me about it is the logic of it. It doesn't make any sense, especially with the sword thing. No. Why can I only do my super secret move once a day? If it's so super secret and so wonderful and so great...
Because that's game balance.
It's game balance.
Everything else can blow a goat.
There's the other part of me, though, that doesn't care. I mean, that really, it doesn't really matter to me because I'm playing a character and I have this personality and this background and this way I play him and all this sort of stuff. And the role play, the game aspect of it, the rules, the numbers and such, only kind of edge it and guide me in a certain way or I guide it or I use it to add flavor to the character, some mechanics to make other people feel better. That I really don't need. So if I'm sitting across the table and I'm playing this wizard who had to sell a soul to get magic in character creation and the melee guy didn't, and I can only use my abilities 3 times a day and the melee guy didn't, and I have a pool that I have to draw from that's limited to use my abilities and the melee guy doesn't, and I have this long casting time to cast a spell to get it off and the melee guy doesn't, and in the end of all of that I've ended up hurting myself, draining my character, don't have all this stuff, and I'm doing the exact same amount of damage or contribution to the fight that he is, I don't actually feel cheated. I think it logically doesn't make any sense from a mechanic standpoint, but on the other hand, I don't care if he's a better character mechanic game-wise. I don't care if it's that piece of paper, the numbers on it are better and more effective than the numbers and stats on my piece of paper, because personally, that's not why I'm there. I'm not there to be the biggest, best killer on the team, because most role-playing game rules are combat, even if we're not talking about combat. We could be talking about how this affects diplomacy and bluff and lie and your artistry ability, your knowledge ability. Maybe he's a better diplomat than me. I don't care because it's how I role play it.
But you, of course, realize that you are in such a tiny minority that if game designers were to throw out balance as a guiding principle of their creations, would fall apart.
Here's what I think. I think that a game should be balance. The game aspect, like you pull that book off the shelf, and I think that there should be balance within the game so that everybody, when they make their characters according to the rules, should be able to contribute, and the game starts off as balanced. And then you just do whatever you want to those rules.
I think that's how
it should start. So that way that a game master and a party or players can do whatever they want with them. They can make them as unbalanced as they want to.
Here's how I'd respond to that. On the one hand, I completely agree with you in that I think it is a wrong attitude to have to come to the table to already be in a pissing contest. Now, I am a believer in balance and fairness and all that, but my first concern is not, am I the biggest badass at the table? It's just, to me personally, it's not what I get out of gaming. I think what bothers me about it, or has bothered me about it over time, is this. I recognize that as a Magic user, I am gaining abilities and flexibility and such that other classes don't have. But when I look at the things they are getting and the price that I am paying for what I'm getting, it just never struck me as fair that I'm giving up far more than I'm getting. Now, once again, this is going to vary from game to game, and some games are more guilty than others. I don't want to get into that nitpicking anymore than you do. But here's what really more than that bothers me. It's the downtime. In an MMO, the fighter goes on to the next pull. I have to sit down and drink.
As long as his hit points are at an acceptable level.
In Shadowrun, he can reload his magazine in one action. I'm out of action for the night trying to recover my stun damage. In D&D, your great cleave is always there. I have to go...
I love great cleave.
Who doesn't? I have cobalt, to go spend...
Cobalt.
I have to go spend hours and hours and hours memorizing my spells for the next day. And on and on and on. It's what in the end kills me. The balance problem annoys me because I feel like I'm giving up far more than I'm getting, especially if you compare it, say, well, wait a minute, you get this, this, and this, but we could create a counter list of, yeah, but in return, the fighter or the rogue gets this, this, and this. And I don't think it balances out in the end. But more than that is the fact that I am saddled with downtime where I cannot participate in the game the way I am meant to, even out of combat, because I'm trying to pull myself back together from these artificial boat anchors that the non-spellcasters don't have.
See, and that's why that aspect doesn't bother me. But I understand why it bothers you and other people, is because during, like, the combat... I mean, because we are essentially talking about combat here. During those combats, I'm not paying attention. I'm fiddling with my iPhone. It comes around to my turn, and they tell me to roll dice. I roll dice because it's so boring.
Well, let's take it out of combat. Let's compare, I'm a wizard, and I have charm person. You're a rogue. You have a really high charisma and a really high whatever social skill you want to apply, okay?
Sure.
Con, bluff, diplomacy, whatever. Compare the two.
In that case, I think that the wizard then has the greater advantage.
But you're talking about, remember, I've given up hit dice. I've given up armor. It's a single shot, which they'll have a resistance against. As opposed to the guy next to me who can do it again and again and again and again and again, has not given up his armor class for this, has not given up his hit dice for this, and is not going to have to rememorize it. And sure, the guy will get a roll against it, but the guy gets a roll against my spell anyway.
Okay, but the difference, though, in this particular example, and it even applies in other examples, is what happens on the other side of the screen. At least in most tables I sit at, there's a screen. Well, he may be getting good negotiation rolls or good bluff rolls or whatever. It still is an organic thing where if the GM, frankly, doesn't want to, you know, just believe this character, no matter how high his roll is, he is not obligated to believe that character. But yet, rules-wise, if you cast that charm person and succeed, and as long as you don't abuse the description of that charm person spell, he is then obligated to give you what you want out of that spell. So even though there's a roll to resist it, your thing, you got to lock. If you're successful, you got to lock in. If the guy gets a successful negotiation roll, it's not necessarily 100% guaranteed successful. So you do have the advantage.
Well, hold on.
In that case.
Which is something that I've granted. I've granted that from the start. That, yes, the wizard is going to have some abilities and some advantages that are not going to come from his non-spellcasting allies. The argument that I'm making is that one difference, or those little perks, I don't think are worth some of the prices you have to pay. Now, you're correct that a charm person spell may be usable on an outright enemy, where no amount of conning or diplomacy or whatever is going to shift that enemy, even though actually according to the rules it can. But
Planescape Torment, dude, you can talk the last boss to death.
Yeah, well,
do that in Fallout.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, if you look at the fact that this guy can use that ability again and again and again without taking any significant setback for it, then suddenly the fact that I can use it on some targets he can't, you know, once again, I just don't know that in my mind this works out in the end. And if anyone walks away from this and or goes on the forums is like, well, wait a minute, you're forgetting that a wizard can do this, this, and this, and there's just no comparison between fireball and swinging a sword, which I think there is with Great Cleave.
You know, it, but even this whole situation between the wizard charm and the rogue, intimidate, whatever,
right,
is a total non-issue in games that I run. And the no matter what rule system we're playing, and the reason why is because the wizard has sold his soul mechanically and sometimes literally to cast that charm spell. Roll dice, resistance roll, it works, and the guy is your zombie. The balance is that in my game, the rogue, I don't have him roll. We have to role play that out. That we actually have to interact with each other. I think that's what I bugs me about, because some people were hitting me with this on the forums too, about, you know, well, the whole balance issue, it goes into other things too. It's not just combat, and it's about mechanics of skill checks and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, the dice shouldn't keep people from role playing. There is the game, the simulationist game, and then there's also, you know, interacting with the people, with the game master, interacting with the people at your table. Role play that out. I hate that. I hate it when people say, well, okay, I'm going to lie to this guy, and in my character's voice, and this, I start weaving the lie and telling how I did it. And I do this, all this great role playing, and there's this great interaction that I'm looked at and says, okay, now roll your bluff check to see if you did it. And I look down at my character sheet. My character doesn't even have bluff. And it's like, I was role playing my character in character, and the guy went for it. Do we have to roll this out? Even if my character did have bluff or whatever. I don't know. I don't really know what I'm getting at with this. I think that's my other
pitch.
That
leads to the pitfall of...
I say, no, you know, no system is perfect. And I do, in a certain sense, I do feel and understand your pain. But it's the best attempt at a clunky thing.
Yeah. Rules, what they're trying to do is they're trying to quantify the unquantifiable. You know, they're trying to...
Quantify a quality and you can't do it.
How do you attach a number to someone's charisma? How do you attach a number to someone's intelligence? Although, you know, we have IQ tests and stuff, but even then, that doesn't really encompass, it doesn't really define a person. If I have the dex, strength, con, intelligence, wisdom, charisma scores of a person, that still doesn't tell me anything about them. But you do kind of need that to do some mechanical interactions with a person,
I guess.
Well,
the same thing's true, I realize, with magic versus the fighter, for example. If we say this sword does a D6, this one does a D8, this one does a D12, you can graph out statistically what that does. You can figure out what each one should cost in gold. You can figure, yeah, it's right there in the numbers.
That's why I think.
But which is more powerful, charm person or unlocked door?
Yeah.
Or knock being the proper spell, but you get my point.
Or intimidate.
Yeah.
An intimidate skill. You know, what is,
how you're trying to quantify the qualitative. Yeah. And I should also make clear, because I think a lot of people that disagree with me on this may perhaps be thinking I'm saying something I'm not, or saying it to a degree I'm not. This has never bothered me to the point I've quit playing Magic users. And I also realize it is human nature to bitch the most about whatever it is you are playing. The adage that's floating around a lot of MMO forums is, I'm rock, nerf paper, scissors is fine.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I've never heard that.
You've never.
But it's so true.
Yeah. And it's, I'm not saying that this is to the point that this, like, deeply outrages me. And I just think there's no equality. I see no purpose to mages. That is not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is that if you total it up, they ought to give, in video games in particular, to a lesser degree role-playing games, they ought to be giving the magic users a little bit more of a break than they do. I don't think they should make them give up so much and then balance down what they do at the moment.
You know what the real question is that we're kind of avoiding, and we hit on a little bit, is we're not really talking about magic users here. What we're talking about is game balance, but we're not coming out and talking about it.
That was going to be my question, is, do you think, Dan, that game designers feel an obligation to do that for fear that players won't know how to essentially control themselves if they did leave it, quote-unquote, unbalanced in that way? If you were able to, say, roll a D8 for hit points just like everybody else?
I think some of it's game balance concern. You want my honest thought, though? I think a lot of it is just, it's tradition. Monkey see, monkey do. Why can wizards not wear armor?
Because Gandalf didn't wear armor.
Yeah, because Gandalf didn't wear armor because they couldn't do it in D&D, and therefore you can't do it in
my... Because if wizards could wear armor and do more damage, they'd be better.
Well, and that's the game balance concern, which I'll grant. I will grant a wizard should not be able to do everything a fighter can do. Okay, I'm not suggesting that never have, never will.
But the ultimate balance...
But what I'm saying is I think some of it just comes from the tradition of, well, it just has to be that way because it's always been that way. The reason we can't give the wizard a D6 hit die and let him wear leather armor is because that's just never been done.
You can never have balance in an MMO or a traditional role-playing game.
You can never have objectivity in journalism or the law, but you still have to strive for it.
Because the ultimate balance, and this is a developer who was talking about MMOs, and he was working on an MMO at the time, and he said that people bitch about balance all the time, and they can never have it, because what balance is, at the end of the day, if you want 100% balance, you have four character classes, each character class has two hit points, each character class gets one attack, each one of those attacks does 1 point of damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's
you have
no range.
To have complete.
Yeah.
Everything
and of
has
course,
to be
you guys are assuming a class-based paradigm. If you have a skill paradigm in which everyone is free to train every skill at his leisure, even to a certain maximum point,
what about a numberless...
Balance is a matter of pick the right ones.
What about a diceless, numberless system?
Well, even following John's point there...
Balance is the whim of the GM.
Yeah. Even following John's point there, I've seen a lot of RPGs where it's a skill-based system until you want to take a magic skill. And now all of a sudden you have to start throwing things away.
I see.
And
I'm not saying in a skill-based system you can have it all at once.
Right.
I'm just saying the freedom to change makes it self-correcting.
Like I was saying earlier, though, I think the real question, what we're like trying to tackle this question without tackling the question. The real question is not wizard versus melee versus this or that versus dice versus this system. It is balance in a tabletop pen and paper role-playing game good and necessary? And if so, why? And if no, why? Or do these games even try to accomplish balance? And if they don't why?
This is a very big discussion.
It is a
very
huge
over
discussion.
Time. We might want to do this next episode.
Well, yeah. Is balance necessary?
I mean, because really, this whole episode, that's what we've been talking about, but we haven't been talking about it.
Well, I agree with you because largely this came in just from my minor agitation, which once again,
you're in mine's bitch, and the fact that I'm torn over it.
Yeah.
On one hand, that I totally agree with you, and it busts the logic of my mind when I see this stuff. But on the other hand, I don't think it should matter.
All right, well, let's come back to that next episode then. We'll come back to talking about the role of balance, when it's necessary, when it's not necessary, and really try to unpack this Hydra, because I'm with you, Chad. The more I think about this, actually, the more torn I'm getting.
And you know what I want to see, too? I want to see people on our forums and email us their views and opinions on game balance, but not within the paradigm of a specific game. We're talking just role-playing games in general. Throw us out some of your opinions on it. It's like, do you think games should be balanced? What games achieve good balance? Do games not need balance? And how is that acceptable?
Right.
I want to hear some other people's views on it because I personally am torn on it and I don't 100% have a fully formed opinion.
I'm with you.
I want to see some other views.
I'm with you. And I would like to see it specifically as you described it in the broadest sense.
Yeah.
Because where I fear this is headed in the forum discussions or the comments on the show blog or whatever is that people are going to either agree or disagree based on a particular game. They're going to compare the longsword to Fireball and say, this is why you're right or this is why you're wrong. And I think that's not the point we're getting at.
Right.
An agitation about that kind of thing, particularly in video games, is what set this off.
Right.
But I think you're right that I would love to see this discussion occur in the much broader sense of what is the state of balance overall in RPGs? What role should it play? What role should it not play? Putting aside the magic user versus fighter debate.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's where we're going to leave this one for this time.
Are we going to hit that next week? Or are we going to?
Yeah, we'll probably hit it next week. So I've got there in my notebook. So in the meantime, get out there and vote on the Power 16-2 Julie Hussey versus Baron Von Badass.
Wow, the patron saint of gaming versus
its worst play.
So yeah, really. We'll serious.
We'll see how that unfolds. You guys take care, and we will see you next time.
See ya.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.